You're listening to Fundraising Radio, a podcast about fundraising for early stage startups. The major rule that we follow here is no bullshit on this podcast, no music to relax you, no advertisements of our sponsors. And in this new season of Fundraising Radio, we are changing things up and talking about sales for early stage startups instead of just the fundraising portion of it. And today's guest speaker, we have Amjad Abuka DJ. Once again, this is the part two of the story that we started covering last weekend. And in this episode, we're going to dive into much, much deeper details of the strategies that Amjad described in the previous episode. So first of all, if you haven't heard it yet, check it out. But if you're too lazy to do that, Amjad is about to give you a quick recap of what we covered in the last episode. And today we're mostly going to focus about one, drip campaigns and reaching out to cold prospects. And number two, running a good evaluation and doing a good proof of concept that actually results in closed signed deals. So Amjad, take it away from here.
Thanks, Constantine. First off, just want to say thank you for having me back. It's an honor to be on the podcast for a second time. And I just want to say you did pretty good on pronouncing my last name. So it sounds like
I was practicing.
The explanation worked out. Cool. But yeah, so as you mentioned, why don't I quickly recap what we talked about in episode one so that if anyone's popping up on this episode for the first time, they have an idea of what was covered. So we focused mostly on what is territory planning in general? Why is it so important? If you're curious for the full explanation and reasoning behind it, you can go and listen to episode one. But in my personal opinion, I believe that having a good territory plan is the single most important thing you can do to set yourself up for success for the year. I gave the example of how most people will just blindly go out and start prospecting without a real plan. And then, 3-4 months into the year, there's not much to show for it. And you start to lose confidence and, the excitement goes down. It's just a very, very dangerous thing, as a salesperson or as an early founder to start to experience that, negative momentum in the wrong direction. So it's very important. I broke it up into four components or four essential parts. The first was kind of just like the cheat sheet, right? Or the scorecard. These are your high level statistics, your metrics that you should be looking at every single day. They should be updated on a weekly basis. And that's, if you're a salesperson, what's your quota for the year? If you're a founder and you don't have a specific quota, it might be, what's your goal in terms of revenue for the year? How much do you have in pipeline? How many opportunities do you have? What's your best case scenario for closed revenue? What's your worst case scenario? Things like that. You might have some personal goals in there for development or other company goals, but this should be referred back to every day. The second component is creating a top account list. So in the example, I think we talked about, a top 10 account list, or in my case, I did a top 25 account list. And the reason for that is because, again, I work at, I lead a sales team at Socket. We're an early stage startup company, Series A. And so we still have so much of the market that's been untapped into. So I kind of casted a wider net for my top account list just because I could, I could afford to do that at this stage. But the big idea here with creating a top account list is you want to maximize for your ARR per hour. What is the annual recurring revenue you'll get from the deal, and break that down on how much time you spent on the deal to get your ARR per hour number. Another way of putting it is, what's the most bang for your buck? So I give the example of, maybe a $50,000 annual contract that takes 6 months to close. And, the customer prospect, requires a lot of handholding and has a lot of questions, might not be as good of a deal that's only half the size, where the evaluation process only takes maybe 3 or 4 weeks, right? So, creating this list based on places where you're going to get warm introductions, where there's a primary need for it, a very good use case for your service. That's really what this account list is designed to do. The third piece is the most important piece, in my opinion, especially for early founders, where they have a lot of connections and, they're able to get a lot of meetings with companies to kind of discuss, their product that they have. And that's the opportunity stage. And this is really your opportunity plan. So where do you have existing opportunities to close business? And are you putting enough emphasis on discovery? I talked about how I think that, in my opinion, and just my experience seeing founders, the area they struggle the most is that they believe that, you know, because they have this incredible vision, right, for this idea, they think that every prospect they talk to, you know, knows everything that they know, right? Or like understands that the problem they're solving so perfectly, and they think that they can just walk in, make a pitch, and you know, someone's going to sign a contract for 100K. And the reality is it doesn't really work like that. You might get a couple of deals like that, but that doesn't scale. And so, you know, I really can't stress enough the importance of discovery and connecting the dots. You know, I can't tell you how many times you work with one person for months and you think that they're going to be the one to sign the contract. And then you realize that you've been knocking on the wrong door.
Yep.
I think, you know, we'll focus on how to actually run a proper evaluation today. And so, you know, once you do find those opportunities and you get a customer or a prospect to agree to trial your product or to do a proof of concept for your product, how do you actually manage that process? I mean, it's not good enough to say, okay, go try it out. And, you know, in a couple of weeks, we'll come back and discuss pricing. You know, more oftentimes than not, they'll run into an issue. You know, and they'll be too busy to follow up with you, or, you know, time will go on and they'll lose interest. Or, you know, I've even seen situations where you tell somebody to go trial your product, you come back in 2 weeks and they haven't even installed it yet. Right. And so we'll talk about how to run an evaluation. I think that'll be a huge value add. But to go back to the fourth part of the territory plan, this has to do with prospecting, right? So what is the strategy here? Now that you have all of these ideas mapped out and you've got your initial plan mapped out, what is the plan to actually go and find opportunities? And so we talked about, you know, writing ghost emails for the you know, the CEO to outreach to investors, right? Or, you know, if you are the CEO, right, writing, you know, asking for introductions through your warm market, you know, who is the investor also invested in other companies? That's a great avenue in. We talked about looking at case studies of competitors and reaching out to those people because they're clearly passionate about the problem, or they wouldn't get a case study. We talked about webinars, right? Pushing a lot of people to a monthly meeting where you can demo for 20 or 30 or 50 customers all at once as a way of scaling your, you know, your reach. And then, you know, the last part is, you know, there will be some level of cold outreach. I mean, anytime you're, you know, building a business, you know, you're going to have to do some educating. And so cold outreach is very, very difficult. The statistics show that it's like, I don't know what it is today. 1%, 2% of emails get responded to. I mean, it's honestly probably
something like that.
Yeah, with the saturation out there, I mean, and all these products in the market, it's crazy. So there is a good way, there is a right way and a wrong way of doing it. You probably heard the phrase drip campaign before. So I'll talk a little bit about what a drip campaign is and how I think, you know, you can create a good one. And the purpose of the drip campaign will essentially be to find opportunity, you know, find people that are interested in your product and build up your pipeline. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the background. That's what we talked about in the last meeting. That gives you about a 5-minute summary. Any questions on that, Constantine, or we can jump into the next part?
Definitely can jump into the next parts. And again, if someone does have questions, first of all, you can reach out to us or Amjad. His LinkedIn is going to be there, or you can just go and listen to the first episode of first part of this episode.
So yep, exactly. Totally. Cool. So yeah, so you've got your territory plan, you've created it. Now, let's figure out how are we going to find our opportunities. So obviously there's the webinar component, there's the using your investors, there's the warm market intros, but as what I'm going to focus on right now is what do you do for the cold outreach component? And I think the single best way you can do that is create an automated drip campaign that will allow you to reach more customers, obviously in an automated way. So first off, just defining what a drip campaign is. Basically, from my definition, it's, you know, it's essentially just a series of emails or messages that are based on a timed schedule or a specific user action. So it might be a 5-part, you know, email campaign where You know, one email goes out every 3 days, for example, or it might be a 5-part email campaign where the next part of the next email only goes out after the first email gets some sort of action from the user. Maybe they click into one of your links that you have in the email, or maybe they open your email, but they don't respond. And so there's all kinds of different flavors of this, as you'll see. And if you go to YouTube and watch videos or do any research online, you'll see thousands of different varieties of this. So I'm going to walk you through one specific way that I've seen it be successful in the past. So that's what a drip campaign is. Again, I've been following this trend of, breaking it down into four components. So for a drip campaign, I'm going to break it down into four components again. The first component is choosing your platform. What platform do you want to use to actually build your drip campaign? There's all kinds of tools out there. I think Marketo is probably one of the most popular ones. There's even GoDaddy email marketing now. I think it's been becoming more popular, I've heard about. Mm-hmm. At Socket, we use HubSpot. That's our CRM. It doubles actually as a marketing campaign tool as well. And so we like that built-in functionality. That's what we use at Socket. So once you've decided your platform, the second part is deciding your goal. What is your goal of this drip campaign? I think in most cases, it's find opportunities, right? Or set up meetings to demo your product and start evaluations, right? But your goal might be different. For any early stage founders that are listening to this, I mean, depending on how early you are, I remember our first drip campaign was actually designed around just getting feedback. So we hadn't even, we were in the process of building our product still, and we wanted to get feedback from companies and, from our target end users on if what we were building and if it would be valuable for them. So it was designed around, hey, do you have time to meet with us to discuss, like, if this is something that you would use or something you would pay for? So that could be the design of your drip campaign. Just make sure it's not random. Make sure it's not half and half, right? It needs to be very, very specified to this goal. This is extremely important. And you'll see why as we get through it. So one drip campaign, just to touch on this last part, my most recent goal of our most recent drip campaign we did was to actually welcome new users to our platform. So just for a little bit of context, we're Socket is, taking the PLG approach where we, our product is free to install, for a set time period. And so we have, a bunch of interested companies that have installed us and are just using the product on their own to get kind of, a sense of what it does. And so my drip campaign that I had my team recently do was designed around welcoming those users to the platform and giving them helpful information as they're testing out the product that might help them, to get more out of the product. And then offering up, support if needed, right? And if they wanted to join a meeting to learn more, they could. So it really just comes down to what is the goal. The third part is planning and drafting your email chain. So now you've figured out your platform, you know what your goal is. So let's figure out what are the steps going to be in this email chain, right? Or messaging chain. I always say, start by writing it down, pen and paper. Why? Mm-hmm. Because it's going to change 10 times as you go mm-hmm. through. And I mean, just in HubSpot's case, it's not super easy to reconstruct it. They always auto save it and you got to go back. And I mean, you're going to lose momentum. I mean, the thing here is momentum, right? Like, you want to get this out the door. And so I think write it down on a pen and paper until you've established it. Decide on the number of emails that you want to have in your email chain and the frequency. Do you want it to be a 5-part email chain, a 10-part, 20-part? I err on the side of less. To me, I find that, if somebody's not opening your email or at least opening your meeting scheduling link or clicking mm-hmm. into the videos you're sharing after, four or five emails, move on, right? Especially at the stage of company we are, we can cast a wider net. We have that luxury. Now, if you're a large enterprise, right, and you already own 80, 90% of the market, you might extend that out to 10 or 12 steps. In my case, I think no more than 6 is probably fine. And then list out what your general topics are going to be about. What are you going to talk to them about in this email chain? Like, write down each of the topics for each of the steps, so that you know what the content will be. So that's part 3. And then the last part before you hit start and you begin automating is optimizing your content. This is so crucial. There are all kinds of studies that talk about, like, you know, what results in higher hit rates and what results in higher open rates and all that kind of stuff. And the bottom idea is you need to go beyond just, you know, giving them the 30-second elevator pitch of what your product does and then asking them to meet with you. I mean, we all get these LinkedIn messages, right? Where like people reaching out to do this. I mean, it's frustrating, right? When you see all these messages come in, and as a salesperson, right, it drives me crazy when I read some of these messages that are just, you know, no offense, horrible, right? I'm like, why on earth, like, does this person think that I am going to take, you know, an hour of my time to invest in this? Like, they gave me nothing in this message. They just said, you know, hey, you know, I could find what they told me, and it's the first line on their website, right? And they just copy and paste it in. They're blasting it out. They follow up with you 2 hours. I'm sure you get this all the time too, Constantine. But I mean, they follow up with you 2 hours later and then again the next day. And it's just like they hit you 30 times before finally you block them or something. And, you know, give me something. Give me an example of how somebody in similar situation to me benefited from this. Show me something. Show me a demo, right? And so for me, optimizing content, what it means is, like in our case, right, our founder, he's you know, very visionary in this space, right? For what Socket does. He was an open source maintainer for a long time. He has a lot of credibility in the space. So what I do is, you know, I take some of his podcasts that he was on, right? And I link to them, or I'll link to a conference that he spoke at, right? And I'll take, you know, a couple of sentences from the conference, right? Speech that I know will resonate with that customer. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something specifically that they said in a case study again. Maybe I'm reaching out to somebody that gave a case study for one of my competitors. They said something and I tell them, go to 3 minutes and 15 seconds in the clip and listen to what he says. I think it will resonate with you. If I got a message like that, I might quickly click into it and listen to it. And it might be really, really interesting. And that would cause me to schedule a time to learn more. Links to exciting blog posts. You know, even the link to a demo has worked very well for me in the past. Like, you know, maybe just giving them a 3 to 5 minute overview demo. Give them something, right? Show them the product. Don't make them go through 3, 4, 5 steps just to go and see your product. I mean, that's so frustrating, right? So yeah, that's step four, right? Is optimizing your content. Once you've done that, you can drop it into whatever platform you choose to use, start the process, and the rest is pretty self-explanatory. It'll kind of work its own magic. Obviously, if somebody responds to you and says, do not contact me anymore, these tools are smart enough to know to drop that person from the process. So, you know, they won't annoy them. You don't have to worry about anything like that. And if they do respond and schedule time, it'll also drop them from the campaign. So they're not going to get, you know, more, you know, spammy type messages, right? If they've already scheduled time with you. So the rest is pretty self-explanatory. So I'll pause there, you know, see if there's any questions about any of those specific steps. But I hope that gives an idea of like what a drip campaign is and how to run one, you know, or at least how to plan for one and begin one.
Perfectly clear so far. The only thing that I wanted to touch onto is the thing that you've mentioned in the beginning of your speech, which is, you know, the outreach of usually done by founders or founding members of the team to the end users, asking them to share their feedback on the product that maybe isn't even finished yet. I've seen a ton of founders who try to change those conversations from just getting feedback to trying to convert the customer. And I've seen them do it just absolutely horrendously. Again, I don't think it's a bad idea. I just think that most founders butcher that execution. So from your perspective, you know, for you personally, when you reached out to those customers, when was the moment when you reached out to them and you're like, hey, we took your feedback in, here's what we've done. I think now we're actually a great solution for XYZ problem that I saw or that you've mentioned in your company. How did you structure that?
Yeah. So basically, if I'm understanding the question, what you're saying is rather than, you know, trying to trick your
exactly. Yes.
From, you know, giving you feedback into becoming a paid customer, how do you actually, what's the balance?
What's the
there?
Procedure? Yes.
Yeah. So I think the at least I'll give you an example from my perspective, and this can be transcended to any industry, but we're in the cybersecurity space. So, you know, for us, there's really not a lot of bullshit when it comes to this, you know, like to convincing these folks. I mean, I think more now than ever, like there's been a big history of kind of snake oil, you know, in this security space where like a lot of products claim to do a lot of stuff. And so CISOs and, you know, different heads of engineering and stuff, they kind of have their guard up when it comes to these solutions. And so you're almost never going to get away with getting a contract signed, or at least a large contract signed, without some form of evaluation run. And so based on the feedback that they give you, let's say you meet with someone and they give you some really concrete feedback about what they would like. Once you feel like your product has an adequate, you know, does an adequate job of solving that problem, you need to lay those points of feedback that they gave out to you in the form of a success criteria in an evaluation. And you have to design an evaluation specifically to prove that those success criteria will be met during the process. Once you can do that, then I think you've earned the right to follow up with them and say, hey, I took your feedback. I listened to it. I feel like we're at a stage now in our company where we should be able to accomplish, you know, those goals. Now, you might not have all of them. I mean, that's, you know, at the design partner stage, that's kind of by definition, right? They're taking a little bit of a chance on you, right? They're making a bet that eventually you'll you know, they'll grow into your solution. Your solution will become more mature to do everything they want. And that's kind of the idea, right? Is they get a good deal up front for maybe only half the functionality or three quarters of it up front, but with the intention that eventually it'll be everything they need. But once you feel like it's an appropriate time to follow up where you've met, you know, at least a portion of the feedback that they've given you, and you're not just ignoring what they're saying and trying to force them into a product that they're not needing, then you come back to them and you basically ask them to run an evaluation or a proof of concept. Let's prove out the concepts you talked about. And let's identify what the impact of those are. And you ask them if, you know, if either themselves or they can designate someone on their team to spend a couple of weeks with you, right? A few meetings on a weekly basis, you know, to invest a little bit of time into seeing if this is actually working to what they want. And that goes right into my next part about, like, once you have somebody that's given you good feedback or has shown interest in your product, how do you actually run that evaluation? So I think that's a really great segue.
Most certainly is. Let's do that segue. Yes.
Great. So you've now have somebody that's interested in your product. Let's run an evaluation with them. Kind of following the same theme of four components, I think a really good proof of concept or trial is really broken down into four essential components. So the first component is setting the goals or the success criteria for the trial. These need to be very clear. You know, this is typically done in the fashion of like a POC kickoff meeting. And just to clarify the acronyms that I'm throwing out here, I know POC sometimes to people means point of contact. In this case, you know, it stands for proof of concept. It's a phrase used a lot in software evaluations, but, you know, a proof of concept trial, same kind of idea. And basically, you know, you would have that initial meeting where, you know, I like to schedule 30 to 45 minutes, probably err on the side of 45 to be safe. And you really want to understand, like, what goals are they trying to accomplish? Now, Constantine, to your point, if you've already met with them and they've already given you feedback maybe 3 months prior about like a solution that they would be interested in paying for, you might already have some of these points written down. So you could already start with half of them. And that would be a great, you know, way to start. Yeah. Hey, I remember from our conversation, you mentioned these three things were really important to you. So I just started off by putting those in as potential goals or success criteria. Anything else, right? And so you spend half an hour going through this, and it's not just enough to write out a list of, you know, 5-6 goals. You want to take it a step further and understand what is the impact of that goal. Like, why is this a goal? What is it actually going to do for them if it's achieved? So, you know, one particular goal, and I mentioned this a little bit in episode one, is, you know, one thing we're doing is we're preventing supply chain attack and cyber attacks from affecting our customers. So that might be a goal for somebody. Hey, I want Socket to stop a potential risk from getting into production in our products. Okay, great. Fantastic goal. What is a leading indicator of that? Like, how will you know that our solution is working properly? Well, we would want our developer to get an alert about it, that we would want them to get a nice alert about it, you know, proactively telling them that, you know, there is a potential risk with, you know, one of the pieces of code that they're using. Okay. So you want alerts. What type, you know, does it matter how they receive that alert? Do you want them to get an email alert? Do you want it to be in line with their workflow? Whatever, right? Like, identify what that is. Okay, got it. Those are the indicators. That's the stuff we need to look for, you know, that it's accomplishing it properly. And then what's the impact of that? What does that mean for your business? If we're able to, you know, prevent something like that from happening, what does that mean to you? Well, you know, this, your customer might say that means that our security team will have a huge burden lifted off their plate. They won't have to remediate issues after the fact. They won't have to spend hours trying to find where the problem was. Okay, got it. So it's, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of time saved, right? In addition to potential damages occurred. Okay, how much time do you think on average your security team is spending remediating issues that are in the code base? Well, you know, they might spend, you know, 5 to 10 hours on a weekly basis. All right, great. And you see what I'm doing here? You're basically, you're getting all different kinds of pinpointed points that can now be used once you get to the end of the proof of concept or trial to showcase the value that your product is bringing. If I know that their security team is spending 5 to 10 hours on a weekly basis remediating issues, I can come up with a very, you know, good, fair, you know, quantified justification for how much money that's costing them. You know, I might know that, you know, this company is based in San Francisco and the average security engineer makes $150,000 a year. That's about $80 an hour. And if I know they're spending 10 hours a week on that, right, I can get a dollar amount saved on a time, you know, on a weekly basis. And then you can kind of just extrapolate that, right, over the course of the year, like what that would be saving for them if this product was in place. And you can use those exact metrics, right, during the evaluation. So at the end of the evaluation, you might have caught 5 issues for them. And so you can quantify that for them. But that's something you would never been able to do if you didn't ask these questions up front. And this is where people fall short. They say, yeah, sure. You know, they think that speed and everything like that is the key. Yeah, go ahead, install our product, try it out. But they don't have all this information. So at the end of the trial, mm-hmm. they say, so what did you think? The customer says, well, it was good, but you know, we kind of have something in place and, you know, I'm not sure it's worth $50,000 and I don't think I can get the budget for that. And what do you say? Well, you're wrong. I mean, what are you going to say? But if you say, well, wait a minute, I think I missed something, but if you take the approach that I said, right, and you have these goals up front and the impact of them, you can come to the end of the trial and you can say, well, wait a second. I remember on a few occasions you mentioned that, you know, it takes your team this much time. Based on our evaluation, it looks like we prevented this many issues from happening. And if my math's correct, I mean, it looks like just in this 2-week trial, we were already able to save effectively, you know, $10,000 worth of time. I mean, if we extrapolated that over the course of the year, this looks like at least a 5 to 7x return on the investment that we're asking to make. Like now all of a sudden they can go and ask for this budget, right? Or they have a better chance at least of getting the budget approved, right? And so that's the idea here, right? Is you want to increase your odds of actually converting these opportunities. Does that make sense?
100%. Got to have the milestones that you can touch onto when the proof of concept kind of procedure is over. Otherwise, the customer just gets confused. They need to delay it a little bit more. They need to look around a little bit more. And yeah, that's a whole other issue that you'll have to tackle. So yeah, absolutely perfect advice there.
Totally. Yeah. So that's step one. And then there's 4 steps to running a proper evaluation, or at least guiding the proper evaluation. The last 3 parts are much quicker. I can't stress enough. The first part is so important. If you don't have your goals and your success criteria, you're already, you know, setting yourself up for failure. The second really just has to do with scheduling. You know, come up with a mutually agreed upon plan. Like, how long is this trial going to be? You know, how many times is it appropriate to check in? Is it okay if we check in with you on a weekly basis, right? Biweekly, whatever it ends up being, right? Just make sure it's mutually agreed upon. Get them to say yes up front. That way you don't have to chase them down and ask, oh, can you meet this week for 15 minutes? I mean, that's just, you're adding more steps. Get them to do it up front and then send out those calendar invites right away. Great. So let's meet every Friday for the next 2 weeks. Let's check in. You know, here's going to be the agenda for the check-ins. Let's review how the product's working. Let's answer any of your questions. Let's review how many issues we've detected, blah, blah, blah. Right. Very simple at that point. And then the third piece is there is going to be, once you do give them the keys to the castle, right, and you do turn the product over to them so they can start testing it on their own, they are going to be kind of on their own to some extent. I mean, yes, you have your weekly check-ins, but what about the rest of the week when they're using the product? You want to set them up for success. And the way you do that is by giving them a checklist of things that they can test within your product. And the way that I position this is, you know, hey, here is a checklist of different features, different functionality in our product that you can test that other customers have tested themselves during the same type of evaluation that they've found, you know, to be very, you know, successful in the product, right? And so you can use this as to guide you as you begin to test our product. And this is really just, you know, like a list of whatever, 15, 20 different things that they can test. Mm-hmm. So again, with I'll just use an example for Socket, right? We are a product that integrates in the GitHub marketplace. So one of the first things on the checklist is, does Socket integrate appropriately, you know, in GitHub? Can you install Socket from the GitHub marketplace? Yes, I installed it. Great. Let's check it off as complete. You know, things to that effect, right? Like, does the product, are you able to appropriately select which repositories you want Socket to protect? Yes, I was able to choose which projects I want Socket to protect. Complete, right? And so it's just a checklist going through this. And, you know, this serves two purposes, right? One, it's so that they have, when they wake up in the morning and they decide that today they're going to focus on testing Socket, yes, they have the checklist to follow. But at the same time, it also provides justification for them. And now the great thing about the checklist, like I was mentioning, was it really serves two primary components. One, yes, it provides the customer with a list of steps to take. So, you know, when they wake up in the morning, if they say, okay, today I'm going to evaluate, you know, Socket, then they don't have to blindly go into the solution and try to figure everything else out on their own. They can just follow this nice checklist that you've provided to them to at least get started. And so that's the first thing that it serves, but it also has another purpose, and it actually helps with the justification to get your solution approved and procured at the company. Basically, you have your quantified, you know, aspect. So you can tell them, hey, look at how much return on our investment we'll get by using this solution, right? And that all goes back to the first part I was talking about, the goal setting and finding out the impact. But they'll also be able to show that they didn't just randomly choose your solution. They actually took the time to thoroughly evaluate it. And by showing that they went through 20, 30 different, you know, checklist items, they're proving to their legal team, to their procurement team, to their leadership team, that they actually spent the proper amount of time to evaluate your solution. And so this is very helpful at large organizations where, you know, your champion or your influencer might be building the justification for your product to, you know, to the person that's ultimately going to sign off on this agreement. And if they don't have anything to show for it, and you know, there's no documentation whatsoever, then you're really up to their mercy, right? Like how much their leader wants to believe them or trust this person. And so the checklist is very important from that standpoint. And then the last part of running a good evaluation is just having some resources and information available to them that they can revert back to. So, you know, if there are specific docs on your website that talk about, you know, how to install your solution, or if you have an FAQ, where, you know, there's commonly asked questions, right? You can link to that FAQ as one of the links for them to revert back to. Maybe you give a demo to them. Maybe you want to, you know, record, you know, if you recorded that demo, you can link to that demo so they can go back to it, right? To see mm-hmm. you know, specific areas you clicked around in your dashboard or whatever that they can easily go back to. You know, maybe there's links to blog posts or, you know, if this is a founder doing these early sales, then maybe you have a bio about yourself, right? Meet the founder. And so, you know, they can have information available about that as well in case, you know, someone in the leadership team says, you know, who started this company? Like, why should we trust them? You know, are they credible? They can have that information readily available. And so the idea here is you're just trying to take, you know, reduce the risks, right, along the process that can go wrong. And so that's it. Those are the four components to running a good evaluation. The only thing I didn't touch on, which I'll just touch on for 30 seconds real quick, is what's the best mode of presenting this? I think simplifying it into one document is the way to go, because if you have, you know, a checklist in its own area and goals written in a Google Doc somewhere else, and then you're sending them an email with a bunch of links, it's complicated. How are they going to, you know, go back to one central location? So I've had a lot of success using Google Sheets. I'll just create, you know, three or four tabs at the bottom of the Google Sheet. And each tab will be the different components that I talked about. So the first will be the goals that we've agreed on and what's the impact of those goals, right? And the leading indicators that we're going to look for during the evaluation. The next might be the agreed upon plan. So here's the dates for our meetings. Here's all the steps that are going to happen. And then, you know, the third tab might be the checklist. Let's list out all the areas, right, that they're going to test during the solution. And then the fourth tab will be, you know, the resources and info tab. That way you have one document you're working off of, you know, allow them to edit it, allow your customer to edit it. You'll be surprised, you know, you'll know when you have a good, true evaluation going, when the customer actually goes in there and adds additional steps to the process. That is the most amazing thing when you see it happening. What I mean by that is, you know, on the mutually agreed upon plan, for example, you know, you might have two or three meetings that you think are important. For them to take in order to thoroughly evaluate your solution, but they might add a fourth or fifth step in there. They might say, oh, well, I want you to demo for this specific team, or I want you to meet this person at this certain time interval. Mm-hmm. So once they start doing that, now you see they're engaged, you know that you have a serious evaluation on your hands. So yeah, that's basically it. We could talk about this all day long. So if anybody really
can,
I'm happy to do a call with, you know, any founder that's interested in talking about this. I'm happy to do anything like that. So just keep me posted.
Perfect. In that case, we are wrapping up today's episodes. My summary is going to be take a look at the description of this episode. This time I'll thoroughly follow up with Amjad to make sure that we include anything that like summarizes this episode really well, or both series actually, and any other relevant links that we might find are going to be there, including Amjad's LinkedIn. So if you do have follow-up questions, reach out to him or me, but ideally to him. So that's gonna be my call to action. Take a look at the description of this episode. All of the links are going to be there, all the useful information is going to be there. And final question, of course, as usually, Amjad, what do you want the user to do? I mean, the user, the listener, to do as soon as this episode is over, besides taking a look at the links in the description of the episode?
I would go back to your opportunities that you have today. And I would look at, you know, where have we seen customers interested in our product or service? And, mm-hmm. you know, be, you know, play devil's advocate. Where could the deal go wrong? I mean, can you honestly say that there has been a quantified return on the investment for every one of your opportunities? Are you certain that, you know, they've done a thorough job evaluating your solution? Do you have a list of everything that they've done? Like, do you know that they're using your product properly? You know, is there a mm-hmm. checklist anywhere? I would ask yourself that. And if not, then it's never too late. You know, there's been times where, I've ran trials with customers that went south, right? And they didn't use it. I didn't do it properly. It's never too late. I mean, you can follow back up with them and you can say, you know, like, I'd like to restart, right? Let's completely restart and let's do a 2-week evaluation. And here's, you know, information that I've created for you to help guide your evaluation. That's what I would do. I think that's the most important thing you can do right now, especially as an early founder where you do have some interest in your product. And you know, if you do that and you do it properly, you will significantly increase your close rate. That I can guarantee.
It is much better strategy, honestly, to run the proof of concept. I've just like Amjad, I've done those things, and yeah, I did improperly a handful of times, and I'm like, well, the hell went wrong here? They were excited. We had kind of a champion there, and then once they're going into the weeds themselves, they get lost. So yeah, that's perfect summary here. We're all set to go. Last call to action. I've already given you one call to action, but my last one would be, if you have not heard the first part of this two-part interview, go take a look at it. Amjad really well structurally described. My speech is not okay today, but Amjad's was good in that episode, so go check it out. He covers the process of preparation to the outreach, which is extraordinarily important. So go take a look, and as always, have a good day.